White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number
353. There are those who believe that life here began out there, far across the universe, with tribes of humans who may have been the forefathers of the Egyptians, or the Toltecs, or the Mayans. Some believe that there may yet be brothers of man who even now fight to survive somewhere beyond the heavens.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition. 2, 1, 0. We have a liftoff. We have a liftoff, and it's lighting up the areas. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center as the second pod is moving off the pad. It is now clear to the top.
Hello and welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with all of our friends and supporters at Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and on this special episode, we are celebrating the 40th anniversary of Battlestar Galactica, which premiered on ABC television on Sunday night, September 17th, 1978. And to celebrate, we're going to represent for you here the Battlestar Galactica fan panel from DragonCon 2018. Joining me on that panel was Andrew Gaska and track director or co-director Karen Henson. So without further ado, here is what was said by Karen, by Andrew, and by me, and mostly by all the fans in the audience who all had something to say about this great classic show, which is now 40 years old. Enjoy.
We are about to get underway with our fan appreciation panel, celebrating the happy fracking 40th and 15th anniversary of Battlestar Galactica. Woo! We still want to make sure that you guys have an opportunity to express yourselves, to talk about some of your fondest, happiest, or even the things you hate the most moments about Battlestar Galactica in all its infinite variety. So to get us kicked off, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our panelists. Just as a quick note, I'm Karen Henson, the co-director of Military Sci-Fi Media. But we're going to go ahead and start down at the end with Van.
Hey, I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I am a writer of about, let's see, I was supposed to have my 17th novel out this week for DragonCon, but the publisher's having delays. Dang it, I really, because it's a near future military sci-fi book, and I was really excited to be able to show it to you guys. Oh well. But I also host the White Rocket Podcast, among other things, and I have a new comic, military sci-fi comic series coming out called Cold Lightning. And I'm also a professor now at Southwestern Illinois.
Hi, I'm not good with this. I'm Andrew E.C. Gaska. I've written some Space 1999 graphic novels, Buck Rogers novel. I wrote two Planet of the Apes novels. I'm also now senior development editor at Lionforge Comics. And I was a very close friend with Richard Hatch for 15 years. So I saw the other side of Battlestar Galactica. And I have to ask what happened this morning because I didn't make it to the panel.
No one else did either. It was an interesting panel, but we did the thing because, you know, you get together, you take what you got. That's a lesson of Battlestar Galactica. You're not going to have everyone you started out with, but you're going to keep the ship running and go. So, yeah, but we had a moment where, you know, fans shared their memories and also memories of Richard, so we were hoping definitely that you would share some of those with us as we go through this one today.
Totally.
And our next guest.
My name's Joe Brenner. A lot of people just call me Badger. My wife, on the other hand, calls me Hey You and What the Hell Are You Doing? Back when I was younger and prettier and before my wife made me fat, I worked on shows like Superboy and Swamp Thing down in Orlando. Haven't been published like these guys, about 30 years ago, small one. I worked for the International Phantom with Stargate. and I am really happy to be friends with James and Karen. It kind of makes things a lot easier.
We have our uses. Okay, so let's go ahead and kick things off. First of all, the biggest anniversary in my mind has to be the 40th anniversary of Battlestar Galactica, the original. Because when we're looking at that, that is where it all starts. I mean, there would have been a sci-fi show that came along later, sure. But would it have been anything even close to the same spirit, heart, and ideas as Battlestar without the original? I can't think of it would. So I would like some of the panelists to share kind of how they came to the series in general. It can be the original or the reimagining, and what your thoughts are in general regarding that.
Oh, mine involves Jimmy Carter and why I hated him one day. You may know, right? You know why it was Jimmy Carter, right? You all know. He went and brought dang peace to the stinking Middle East. Why'd he have to do that? I know, man. But he had to talk about it on Sunday night, September 17th, 1978 on ABC, right in the middle of the dang show. So, I don't think I was able to stay up late enough to see the ending. So, but yeah, there I was, man. I was 10 years old. In the living room in my house in Alabama, watching this show, and I remember being struck by, because we didn't know anything about it up front, and I just remember being struck by it. By, on the one hand, it was this huge, elaborate. Obviously, we'd heard how expensive it was going to be. They were sparing no expense, you know. And I remember thinking, "Wow, I mean, this is almost like Star Wars on TV." That was the whole idea, you know. But on the other hand, I also remember thinking, because this was the, you know, the mid to late 70s, and that was the time of Eric Von Daniken and the UFOs of, you know, God, what is it, Runways of the Gods,
Chariots.
And all the Chariots of Gods and all that. And, well, I guess they had to have runways to land their UFOs on. And, and you know, all that. So it was
in Nazca.
Yeah, that's right.
Chariots for the flying horses and the runways.
Exactly. And you had the ancient Egyptian stuff. You had all the, it had this weird history thing going on to it. But then there was also this almost, and I hesitate to say it here, but there's also a little bit of a cheese level to it, because it was network television. And you could see the areas where they were kind of made to dumb it down a little bit in some places, maybe, which was frustrating even for a 10-year-old, because they always underestimate, you know, the audience. And so it was really kind of just this amazing thing where you tuned in every week to see where were they going with this, and would there be an ending eventually? You know, that was my beginnings for that first show.
For me, there's something similar in what he said, is that it just felt like Star Wars on TV, and it was, you know, my fix between that, and then Buck Rogers was my fix in between the two Star Wars movies. When I was a kid, I used to always play Starbuck, and I used to pretend either my best friend at the time would be Apollo. If he wasn't there, there'd be an imaginary Apollo there. So when I was obviously much older and I went into business with Richard, I went on the Richard Hatch cruise with him, and the two of us wound up a moment away from all the fans in the arcade. And he wanted to play this zombie game where you stand there with the guns. And I'm standing there with the guns of Richard Hatch, you know, shooting zombies, and I'm having this. I was doing this in my mind as a child, standing here with this man, you know? And now here I get to do it in real life. It was completely surreal. So, I mean, I know that's not exactly what you asked, but close enough.
It works for me.
I guess we're all about the same age, because I was about 10 years old when it came on the air. Mm-hmm. And I remember, I didn't know anything about the show coming on the television, except my sister comes screaming in the house, 2 years older than me, "Oh my God, Rick Springfield's gonna be on a new TV show." And I'm like, okay, whatever, I'll watch it, blah, blah, blah.
And briefly.
Rick Springfield shoots out the thing, gets blown up. I'm like, oh, cool. And my sister's like, I'm not watching this anymore. And I continued to watch the series. And I was like, I could have given a rat's butt about Rick Springfield. And then I was realized in how integral he was to the storyline. But I got into it because I was like, well, it's not quite Star Wars, because that came out last year. But the special effects and the acting for a 10-year-old was better than most of the things that were on TV. And the big thing in 1978 through 1982 was General Hospital. And, you know, it was just my mom and my sister at the time, and I was just like, all this soap opera stuff, finally something for me.
Okay, so when the show came out, so did I.
during the first hearing, or
I not quite, but June of that year. So I did not have a chance to really get the same experience of seeing it during that time frame, but definitely watched it later and growing up, of course, because I grew up on a steady diet of things sci-fi, including Star Wars and pretty much anything Trek and anything that had to do with people and space and stars and stuff. We watched it in some fashion. And actually, it was, curiously, you know, some people associate that with the Masmorph thing, but that was actually my mother. Mother is obsessed, and so I benefited greatly from that because that's how I knew I needed to be watching Babylon 5 and a lot of those other shows that we really love. So when I started going back to it, though, to actually watch it rather than just know about it, because it was a thing I knew about, but didn't know. It was because of the reimagining version, and so I saw that. I'm like, okay, wait, no. I need to know the source material because that's my thought process, academic in nature. If I see a movie that's based on a book, I must have read the book first because otherwise it makes no sense to me. So I had to go back and look at it, and on my impression, yes, that there was definitely the cheese level in there at some point, but I was really impressed that it was a lot more than that. Given that, you know, you are dealing with networks, you are dealing with constraints that aren't even necessarily the same ones you would have now as far as material and other things. I was also impressed with the relative diversity of the cast to some extent too. I mean, for the time frame, I thought that was at least a good step. And so when I came away from it, I had a very healthy respect then for Richard Hatch on two levels, especially because he's kind of my favorite part of the whole thing, just generally speaking. But yes, as Tom Zarek and also in his original role.
A lot of fans get upset about this, but like Richard was against the remake originally until he realized what it was doing. And I know older fans sometimes get upset about this, it's a little controversial, but in the end, and I totally agree with him, the new show, because it didn't have the constraints of network TV from the 70s, it actually is truer to the initial concept than the old show was. It's like when you look at the pilot, you see where they were going with it, but then instead we went to the Old West planet and went to the, right, the comical android planet, and you know,
they got the casino, forever.
You know, they strayed away from what the original concept was because it was considered too serious and too dark, and the you know, the newer show didn't have to do that, so.
So they went dark.
They were not afraid of the dark. They
knew.
There were no candles. Everything was great.
And when you think about it, like the pilot of the old show, okay, mm-hmm, like there's genocide. You know, and then these people are fleeing for their lives. There's nothing silly about that.
Right.
But they thought it was too harsh, so they had to try and dumb it up a little bit.
Well, did you notice that with the newer series, when they came out with this new BSG, and it was so dark? Did you notice a lot of other programming went the same way, all the way up to the comical versions of Stargate in the beginning with this, all the humor, got a little darker in Atlantis, but when they came out with, you know, it just went really dark.
Universe.
And a lot of people kind of went, what? But if you look back, you think about it, BSG is the one that started it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I like also about it too, you know, what, no matter what incarnation of BSG you're looking at, it really sets certain standards and tries things and pushes the envelope as far as sci-fi goes. And that was one of the things I always appreciated about it. So I'd like to also go ahead and take some questions from you guys in the audience as well. And not just questions, but also your thoughts. What is your moment of coming to BSG? What is your favorite part of it? I mean, you don't have to pick a favorite child. It's okay if you like everything too, but you know, share with us. What do you think?
Has anyone seen Battlestar Galactica? Is this show?
All right, we have a hand up.
I feel like you guys have seen it.
Yeah, maybe.
I feel like you two maybe have seen it.
I like both versions of the show. I appreciate the new version quite a bit. I saw every episode. My favorite is the original because it's more fun. My favorite convention was the Galactica 20 Yarn Reunion in Los Angeles, and the cast was so great. There were fans waiting in line for an autograph, and Jack Stauffer, who played Bojay, was handing out hors d'oeuvres to the fans.
That's about what Bojé did on the show, pretty much.
But they were great. For the price of admission, you could get as many autographs as you wanted. Everyone who was there, except for Dirk Benedict and Herb Jefferson. It was a great con. It's on video somewhere. But I think that was the ultimate con for me, because so many cast members were there, and they were all very friendly. They would just talk to you. Even John Colicos was there.
Oh.
And I was so thankful to be able to meet him, because he died like 2 years, 3 years later.
And you mentioned General Hospital. General Hospital. Yeah. There's the connection there. Mm-hmm. He was the villain on both shows.
Oh, I didn't realize he was on two.
He was the same casting company.
Yeah.
But one more comment. I would like to see somehow a theatrical movie where they bring back the original series concepts, not copying it, but more in line with the fantasy type movie. Somehow meld the two, where it's serious but still a little more fantasy oriented, and more of a Star Wars fun type of movie. I'd like to see that happen.
How many here are familiar with are familiar with the Tom DeSanto, Bryan Singer reboot that almost happened?
Yes.
So for those who don't, real quick, they were doing a continuation, and the original actors were coming back, and Ian McKellen, is that the guy who plays Gandalf?
Yeah, Ian McKellen.
Ian McKellen was going to be Adama because Lundgren had passed away. And this was all happening in 2000 and 2001. They built sets and everything, and then 9/11 happened. Everything got shut down in Hollywood. Brian and Tom had to go do X-Men 2. So they said to Universal, hey, hold the sets and we'll go do that and come back. As soon as they walked away, Universal destroyed everything. They contacted Ron Moore and said, do you want to do a new Battlestar? And Ron was aware that they had built all those sets and everything, so Ron was like, well, we don't have to do any work with sets or anything, so sure. And then he found out that everything had been destroyed. And that's when the new concept thing happened. So there's lots of concept art for that. Not all of it's on the internet. There's a ton that's not on the internet. I've been talking to Tom. We're trying to find the right publisher where we can put this all out in a book, scripts and the art. So that's much more what you're talking about. Definitely.
Awesome. Yeah. I'll buy that one.
Heck yeah.
Hopefully we can make it happen.
That's for a dollar?
Yeah.
I'll buy that for a dollar.
Yeah, lots of dollars.
We're doing our best to make it happen. So
that'd be great.
I guess I can go first and then back up.
And first, just a throwback to Superboy. I watched you guys do that at my high school in Orlando. That was hilarious.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I was Dr. Riley on the show. I had 12 lines in 2 years.
There you go.
But at least I had a steady paying job.
Yeah, for sure.
And I did get a really nice kiss at the end of the series from from Stacey Haddix, so that was nice.
In all three episodes that aired?
Well, I did actually get to see my episodes air on regular TV, but since Viacom won't release it, so they started this trend on, I think it's on Facebook now, and they had the Superboy reunion in one of the cities, and several of them showed up, except all the primaries, with the exception of the two guys that played, and that was pretty much it. But I don't think it's ever going to come out on DVD, or it'd be nice, because I'd love my grandkids to be able to see it one day. I said, look, Grandpa was skinny.
I think my favorite moment's more of a callback, is what Portlandia did with the Battlestar Galactica thing, if you ever saw that skit. I think
it's awesome. One.
And just the fact that you heard the dun-dun, and we all knew exactly what was going on and where they were. My question, though, is more kind of real world starting to match our fantasy with all the AI stuff that's going on, shutting down, the fact that AI started to create their own language, the supercomputers, that kind of stuff. Any comments on that, and where you see AI going based on how we view our fantasy world with Battlestar Galactica?
Well, there's already an AI out there that wants to kill all humans. So, it depends on how it's programmed to begin with and how free they want to let it, if they want to put restrictions on it. We've got a lot of friends in robotics, but it scares the hell out of them.
I have a lot of friends who are robots, so yeah.
They can't wait to take over. I think it was interesting in the context of Battlestar Galactica, it's interesting how the original series did almost nothing with that. I mean, originally the Cylons in the original series were lizards in armor, basically, and they decided to make them robots right before they filmed it. If you go back and read the Glenn Larson novel, they're lizards, and the Imperius leader was like a big lizard, and so I kind of like that, but But I mean, it's interesting how they changed them into machines, and yet they really never got anywhere near the idea that maybe they would have some kind of a influence or power over the machines the humans use. There was never anything like that. And I thought that was one of many really interesting things that the new series did, was to incorporate the whole idea that humans had built machines, and we built the Cylons too, but that's a whole other story, right? We built all these machines, and the way the Cylons attack us is by getting in and taking over our artificial intelligence stuff. And that was something that I feel like was a wasted opportunity on the old show. But I guess they weren't, in 1978, that wasn't their priority.
Well, I want to go real quick on a tangent in regards to what you said. Mm-hmm. The whole point of the robots was so they could kill them and not feel bad about it. You know, and that's exactly why George Lucas did the Clone Wars, from what I understand, which is supposed to be clones versus clones, hence called the Clone Wars. Why not call it the Droid Wars if you're fighting droids? You know, so they made it robots, so again, oh, don't feel bad when we cut this guy's head off. You know,
so. It's just the one guy, so it's okay, it's cool.
Well, just one guy, but, you know, getting back to the AI on things, you know, again, programming, whatever the case may be, but at some point, sometime, maybe not in our lifetime, maybe so, who knows, but what happens when something does become self-aware, develops empathy or anger or, you know, in incorporating that into any series could be dangerous for any show. It's like when a show starts going south, let's go back in time. Let's go that route. It could be very dangerous for a show. But incorporating it in, I think when the second series came out a few years back, you know, you had the ones that looked like humans and they could be reborn. And I know there's more text to it than that. But were they already self-aware? Because the toasters that were with them were not. They were, again, just the drones.
But then they started to get aware towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
Didn't think there was a hand in the back?
I guess this is maybe not a proper thing. I only saw the newest one. I really need to go back and see the original. I thought that in the newest one, I really thought it was awesome how the ship combat strategy, where the Cylons have the missiles and all that, and the humans just kind of go around the ship and do the flak therapy. Is there like a reference, like Battleship Combat? How was that concept up with? Because I love that. It seemed somewhat realistic of how we might actually see space combat put up a metal screen.
Kevin Brazier, he worked at NASA. I don't know if he still works at NASA, but he was the science advisor on the show, and he fought hard to get the physics the way the ships work in that, because that's the way it really would be in outer space. So that's how that came about.
Are you telling me that the special effects on the original Galactica were not totally scientifically accurate? How dare you?
Surely not.
I mean, Star Wars went out of its way to be, to base it on World War II stuff. You know, even the going down the trench at the end was based on the dam runs that the bombers did. So they were just going with, you know, atmospheric physics in outer space, and that set the template for everything after that. Mm-hmm. So. Kevin wanted to make it as realistic as possible. So.
More like Babylon 5 in a way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but
they had cartoons. Real battle tactics in that, though. They actually pulled some of the stuff that, talking to some of the people I've met over the years, some of the actual battles that they showed on there were actually recreations of some World War II.
And Babylon 5?
Yeah.
In space.
In space.
With space physics or not?
Well, they're just in space.
Well, personally, I think, you know, that particular show was more Lord of the Rings, but that's just my opinion.
Right. So they didn't try to do the science like Battlestar did.
There was a lot of science in that show.
I mean, in the space combat.
I doubt it.
Okay.
And we'll talk about that at the 7 o'clock hour when we have our Babylon 5 anniversary panel.
Hey, that's like generating gravity without centrifugal force.
All right, there's a hand in the back, all the way back.
So the Centurions and the Raiders in the reimagining weren't as self-aware as the ones they called the skin jobs, because they actually had a cognitive limiter, which Six took out at one point, so that they could vote which way to go. Leave the humans alone, kill them. So that's why they weren't on the same level as the rest. They were actually restricted.
And that's why at the end they were more,
It checks out. All right.
Seems legit.
And here, there's a hand there. There was a hand somewhere else. There's lots of hands. We'll start with hand here, and then we'll go hand here, and then we'll go hand here. That would be.
Okay. I was at the 20-yard reunion. They actually filmed a few scenes for Richard Hatch's second coming trailer. he even asked me to be in the trailer, but I had a job in Florida, so I had to decline. But anyway, in that trailer, you know, it never shows the Cylon lizards, but I've seen a photo where a warrior is battling a giant lizard. And I was wondering, do any of you know if there was a script that involved the lizard Cylons in his concept of his storyline for Second Coming?
Totally. I thought there was a scene, at least, I mean, I know there were different versions of the trailer, but yes. There's a version I saw where, like, a lizard guy leaps out of a Viper cockpit, starts fighting the the Colonial Warriors. So, yeah, Richard had intended to bring the lizard stuff back, so.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting, yeah. Weren't they supposed to be like, they kind of retconned it that the lizard people had created the Cylons and then the Cylons destroyed them.
Yeah, so there's only a few left of them.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting.
I enjoyed the original series. I was younger, and so because it was more simplified sci-fi, I don't think I could have understood it if it was like the reboot, which when I watched that, I was older and I could appreciate it was very deep and engaging. Once I got past the first year, because I was confused with all these different versions of different characters, I didn't realize that the human form Cylons had multiple, clones and such. But I really love Caprica because Caprica shows how the Cylons, the artificial intelligence developed, the robots developed, got into religion, VR, terrorism, religion, and I was really, really disappointed when it was canceled.
It's an underappreciated show.
Yeah, it was phenomenal, and they talked about different ethnicities, and so. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I know there's a hand here and here.
We have so many hands.
Yeah, so I had kind of an unexpected connection with my parents through Battlestar. Like, I was introduced to the original series when it was like reruns on Sci-Fi Channel or something. And I heard they were coming out with a new series. I was really excited, watched through the whole thing and, mentioned it to my parents one day. And my dad's like, oh, yeah, so, I used to watch that. And then we watched this other, show with the same producer. We actually named you after the producer, Christian Nivey, I think his name is. So they named me Christian after him. And I had no clue until I had already gotten way into Battlestar. And just as kind of like an ironic thing too, my day job is building artificial intelligence for hospitals.
We're all doomed.
That's awesome.
It's destiny.
Okay, let's see. I think you were next to them over here.
So, we've talked about the impact, that Battlestar has had on a lot of people. So, actually, on the Facebook live stream, one of our members, Mark Newcomb, just gave a comment. So, and I thought this was just awesome, and I wanted to share it. So, he said, I'm a longtime fan of Battlestar Galactica Productions. Love Gene Roddenberry and all the cast for great work. I also wanted to share that Dirk Benedict's book, Confessions of a Kamikaze Cowboy, helped save lives, including of my own. So definitely, Battlestar touches us in all different kinds of ways, whether it's through the show itself or through other work that some of the members have done. So,
and giving names to new life, saving lives?
Yes.
And what? Okay, over here.
So I'm just curious, I really come to the show from the reboot, the second version. And so in my mind, I see it as a mashup of the Odyssey, the Frankenstein myth, and Hindu mythology about creation of the universe. Anything else you would add?
The number one, Mormons. It's Mormonism in space.
Oh, is it?
Because Glenn Larson was a Mormon, and it's all about the lost tribes of Israel, and it was originally called Adam's Ark, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I got early on that it was going to be the creation story for Earth,
for us.
But I had no idea there was a Mormon connection.
I was afraid to say anything about that. I didn't know how touchy a Saturnian.
Do we like better that they got to Earth in prehistory or that they got to Earth in 1980?
How much time do you have?
It depends on what you like it for.
Yeah, that's true. I know, I just always, when I was a kid watching the 78, 79 show, in my mind, I was imagining that when they finally got to Earth, it would be like the Star Trek Federation Earth, and they'd be like, oh, we'll help, and then they'd just like have all these Enterprise-type ships go out and just blow the hell out of the Cylons. And I was just seeing that, you know.
It's just funny, because for me, it was the opposite. For me, I thought Apollo was the origin of, because I was very much into Greek mythology and stuff like that, so I thought he's the sun god. You know, he came, finally they got to Earth, mm-hmm. and him and his viper going across the sky, someone made a sun god myth.
That's, yeah.
You know, that's what I thought. Sure. So it's funny we went opposite directions.
Well,
and they went in the middle.
They did, yeah. Which is, well, I guess it's just because I wanted, when they got here, I wanted us to be able to help them. And that was, to me, beyond all the other problems with 1980, my biggest problem, really, and there's obviously bigger than this, but my biggest problem is we couldn't do anything to help them. We were, like, going to be victims. We were further behind in technology than the 12 colonies that they wiped out. And I was thinking, God, thanks, Galactica, for bringing them here. You know, go somewhere else.
It would have been interesting if there had been a Buck Rogers in the 25th century connection.
Exactly, yeah. Have some efficacy there.
I was, like, 12 years old. I wanted to hit a baseball like those kids did.
We have some killer early 80s fashion tips. That's about it.
Oh, that's just kind of the big hair.
I have one other question, if I can throw it out there to the group and everybody else. This is something I've always wondered about, and I never asked anybody. So, in the original few episodes, the female leads were Athena and Cassiopeia. And they had a neat little love triangle with Starbuck, and that was all well and good. And it was sort of like after about 5 episodes, Athena just vanished from the show, and they just had Cassiopeia, and then all of a sudden they bring in, with the Pegasus, they bring in
Sheba,
and she becomes the other female lead. And I've always wondered, did they just decide they didn't know what to do with Athena? Did the actress quit? Because she was still in the credits, I think. Maren Jensen, she was in the main cast, and yet I don't think she's in 10 minutes of the rest of the series after the first few episodes. I always just wondered what happened to Athena.
After Greetings from Earth, I've read that she was losing interest in the show.
Don't blame her.
Happy with her acting, and she just thought it wasn't for her. She wanted to get back into movies or modeling.
Okay.
Bringing up Cassiopeia, another interesting thing about how the show started dark and then we're like, we need to kid this up. Cassiopeia was a solicitor, which was a prostitute in the original thing. And then they're like, oh, no, she needs to stop doing that, become a nurse. Because that's right. Women should be a nurse.
Yep. Yep.
It's service work.
It was fine for Marina Baccarin in Firefly. What's wrong with Cassiopeia?
I always thought it was Richie Cunningham syndrome, where he had a brother for 3 episodes,
yeah.
and then never a mention
right.
of him again.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Yeah, that kind of leads me to something I was thinking about. Just when I first heard, I loved it as a kid, so when I first heard about Reboot and that Starbuck was going to be cast with a female actor, can't be, because, Richard, I just couldn't see it. But as I watched the show, I mean, from the first episode, I mean, it just hit, it's perfect. This is it. It worked. And I fell in love with that character all over again. But I was just wondering, you know, how I read and saw a lot of controversy about it. I mean, you read it, you talked about the influence it had kind of the darkness of future shows. Well, I would also say it had an impact on female leads in other shows, and now they're talking about Earth, and we only have a female four, I think. So I was wondering, you know, what do you see in the connection?
Well, if you notice a lot of things, not just science fiction, they're rebooting a lot of old movies and stuff and replacing the male roles with the female roles. And that's great if it's done in context, or if you completely blow it out of the water, like Starsky and Hutch or whatever, where it just went completely stupid. But if you've got a positive female role model, whether it's the ladies from Babylon 5 or, you know, creating a whole, you know, a Boomer and a Starbuck that are females and they're strong leads, that's a very positive thing. But when you go down the stupid road, and I'm using that term very liberally, because look at, you know, we have 300 channels on TV and only maybe one thing to watch. But it depends on the role, depends on the script. Now, this is just my opinion. And unfortunately, my opinion doesn't go very far because, again, my wife is in the audience and I have to watch what I say. But does it have a positive? Yeah, I think it does. Whether you go dark or whether you go on the lighter fare, like what you were talking about, keeping things lighter and it's easier to follow, like what you were saying. You know, for a 10-year-old to follow a show like that, it was great because it was dumbed down. I didn't understand a doggone thing in Star Wars in 1977, but I thought it was really cool. But as I grew older, I was more intense of not the special effects, but how well the, whether it was male or female, how well they presented the role. Were they the role, or were you just watching somebody going, what's my next line? So the females they picked for, you know, like the reboot, I think they were phenomenal. Unfortunately, that is probably one actress even last year. I still can't get past the word hello and everything else comes out.
Well, I'm curious what the panel and the audience thinks about when they recast the roles. I don't mean just with different actors, but, you know, Boomer became an Asian woman and Starbuck became a woman and Colonel Ty became white and the captain became the admiral became Hispanic and all. I mean, it's just an interesting thing to me that it was just so random, you know. I mean, I was almost expecting, okay, well, if they try to change, like, the ethnic makeup of the cast, then they'll try to make it more diverse, and that's great. But I can remember thinking they just kind of scrambled it. It's like they didn't, it, you know what I mean? It's like it's not that they added so much as they just kind of stirred it around a little bit.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Okay, so are there, I think the point is that for diversity, it's like, are there specific women roles, or can this just be a person? You know, is there a black role, or sure, could it just be a person? So I think it's great what they did with it. I think a lot, like you recently were mentioning, a lot of times they just do it for doing its sake.
Money.
The first thing that comes to mind is the G.I. Joe movie with the Wayne's brother, whatever, you know. But it's like, in that case, it made no sense because G.I. Joe, there's a billion black characters in G.I. Joe already, so let's take a white character and just make him black and have no reason, and the movie sucks. But regardless, the movie didn't suck because of that. The movie sucked because it had a bad story. This had good story, and the women were strong. Could it have worked if that Starbuck was a man? Absolutely. You could have switched Starbuck and Apollo, and as mm-hmm. they're male or female, they didn't have to be male or female. And with the way things are going now, eventually, like with Star Trek, they could have been two guys and had a relationship like that.
Sure.
You know, and it still would have been strong, because in Star Trek Discovery, that's a very believable relationship. It doesn't matter what it is. So I applaud seeing things like that moving forward.
We're a lot more open-minded than we were 25 years ago, too.
Is it possible they got the ensemble together and then decided who would rock it as the various characters? I don't know. And then, does anybody know why it came down off Netflix and will it ever come back up? Where will it emerge?
I can answer the Netflix question easy because I got an email back from them about it. They just rotate their shows out. They can only hold so much storage space, and it might be available in Canada, but not here, and in Europe, and et cetera. But they rotate shows out, like Serenity disappeared off Netflix for a long time. It's back on there right now. They just rotate stuff out. So if you see it, get it, watch it, or go buy the DVD kind of thing. And that was their general attitude. You know, watch what we put up there or don't subscribe.
What's happening now in general is all these studios are working to have their own streaming service rather than use Netflix.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if we're going to see a Universal network at some point, which has everything Universal has, and you can't watch Universal stuff anywhere else. Cable TV is definitely dying, and this is going to be the new format.
I mean, basically, that's already the case, though, because, you know, NBC, Comcast, mm-hmm. that's all the same thing now. So Comcast kind of controls exactly how things work as far as, you know, on-demand streaming availability and things like that.
Just out of curiosity, how many people in here have Hulu or Netflix on their phone or tablet right now? Or Amazon, for that matter? CBS?
Yeah.
Right. The only reason anybody subscribed to CBS was to see what? The Star Trek. And as soon as it was over, you cancel it, right?
One of the things that was
haven't done a cancel
yet. Not yet.
It's almost back.
And that's why they're going to do multiple Star Trek shows now on CBS, because they're not stupid. They'll probably have when Discovery ends, now the Picard show starts, and then, oh, now in the new season, blah, 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 to keep you going.
And even Stargate, you had Origin subscription. Yep. That's kind of the model that they're going with.
One of the smart things is if anybody wants to try CBS without having a new service, I canceled my CBS thing, and then I added it as a channel on Amazon Prime, so you can do that now. It still costs the same amount of money, but at least you have everything in one place.
It's $1 cheaper.
Oh, is it cheaper? Okay.
There you go.
It's like getting the BBC also. It's a really good add-on. Mm-hmm. To Amazon. Not that I'm promoting Amazon.
Me neither.
We are not paid. All right, there's a hand up here, and then we have one.
Yeah, not familiar with the old series. I actually started watching the new one at my first year in college, which was 2006. And it turned, like, it was just me and a friend, but we got, like, our whole dorm into it. So we had, like, parties where we would, like, invite people over. It became, like, a real cool bonding experience just to watch the new show with everyone. So I'm just really curious as to why everyone is saying, like, it's darker than the original. Like, what specifically makes it darker? And I was like, I don't know. I just want to know.
Have you ever seen Stargate SG-1 and then Stargate Universe?
I haven't got into that yet.
No.
Okay, well.
I showed him Battlestar, though, so he's going
to
show
Let me simplify this. You have to forgive me. I'm going to bring out my degree in psychology
okay,
here.
Let's do it.
All right. Think of watching a television show like, and please forgive me those of us over 40, The Brady Bunch. Okay, not the movies, those were really campy. All right, think of watching that and then turn around and following it with Archie Bunker. The humor is darker, a little more real life. Okay, in real life, we don't have, you know, everything ends in a happy ending. Now, if you think about a lot of the original series, which you really should see, a lot of the episodes ended with a bottle of ambrosia and a cigar. Okay? To this day, I don't care what the writers and producers say, that was mead, I don't care. But if you look at the difference between the two, there's a little more humor in one, and there was humor in the new, in the reboot. But look at how deep the characters were. There's a lot more personality and backstory behind them. Notice nothing worked, everything broke. Okay, nobody was ecstatic or happy. How many times did you see somebody smile over and over again in the new series?
They didn't catch a break, man.
There was no whiteboard with a body count, you know, on the old show.
Turned upside down in the new series. But everything was brightly lit, everything was clean.
In fact, you know, we were talking about this kind of a little minute ago, that it's the new show. Every episode, they were very well aware that their civilization has just been wiped out, and they were counting down until they were extinct, right? On the old show,
they forgot about it after
the pilot. No. They'd gotten over it by the time they got to the second half of the pilot.
Right.
They were on the gambling casino planet, and Starbucks, like, smoking a cigar, trying to figure out how to make money. I'm like, dude, you just had the Holocaust, and you're trying to figure out how to win at poker or pyramid or whatever. Yeah. I'm like, they had moved on to happy time.
Sears, yeah.
Yeah, boom.
There was a hand over here, I believe. Yes, right there, and then next. Yes, you.
I was new to the show, so I only watched the one and seen the reboot. My favorite episode is 33, and my question to y'all, you know, we all see a bunch of media, so there's nothing that really surprises you with the story. And one thing that actually made me mad was, like, most of my favorite characters were part of the final five. So what were y'all's thoughts on the final five, because it made me mad, because I was like, what?
Yeah. Dude, by the end of the show, I figured everybody was a Cylon. I gave up on worrying about it. I'm like, they're all Cylons, it's all a nightmare.
And what does it mean to be human?
Yeah, well, that was a big question of the show.
Can you answer that question now as a human?
Yeah. I have to look inside my own head. I can't.
The funny thing is that you know, everybody had theories of who was a Cylon and who wasn't and everything. I know a lot of people thought Starbuck was a Cylon. But they made you care about the character, whether it was a Cylon or not. You know, they, it wasn't like we're broadcasting, there's something wrong with this person. And which made to the reality of the shock to themselves when they discovered they were a Cylon. I remember the episode when they all start hearing the song in their head, and I was like, oh crap, oh crap, oh crap. You know?
Yeah, also a Cylon.
Yeah, exactly. Well, obviously.
But don't forget, we had Good Boomer and Evil Boomer.
Right.
Also a Cylon.
I loved also the idea. I loved that they would take little tiny things from the old show and bring them back, sometimes in a different context. And when Starbuck disappeared or whatever and came back, she was, wasn't she in like the white suit, like when she went on the light ship? In the original, yeah, in the original series, they would get abducted by this big light ship of angels or something that were fighting Count Ibley and the devils. And when they come, and they would be in white versions of their uniforms. So it was neat that they even brought back the white, you know, they encounter some other thing. And
I was clear that Starbuck was an angel.
Yeah,
when in the end, yeah. Spoiler.
Not when she started out.
No, I think she died in the... Am I spoiling this for anyone?
Right there on the end.
Okay, yeah, I revealed earlier in our previous panel that I have not actually seen the very last episode.
Oh, dear God.
Oh, my God.
Imagining, I know what happens. I just have not seen it.
So we didn't ruin anything?
I've seen it. It does not exist. But we'll get to that some other time. Eventually, I will see it. Like I saw Buffy, eventually, 7 years after it ended. Eventually, it will end for me, but just not quite.
You want to borrow the DVD?
I have the DVD. Okay. That's not the problem.
Without ruining it with spoilers any more than we already have, and I apologize.
No, no, I know.
How do fans of the new series feel about the finale, because it's everybody's split on it.
I was wondering the same thing.
I personally think it's fantastic.
Oh, me too.
I agree.
Can we get hands up of who liked it and who didn't?
Liked it.
How about neutral?
Neutral.
Wait, this is who doesn't. This is who doesn't. And now let's do neutral. Who's neutral on it?
Neutral.
Okay. The majority liked it.
That surprises me.
I just thought it was rushed. I could have thought they could have expanded it just a little bit more.
Yeah, I know we had
I thought it would be more disliked.
Of Von Moore's version. How much do you think that was influenced just being in the wake of 9/11?
All of it.
Yeah.
All of it. That's how he pitched it, you know, when they decided to turn him on. It was. I mean, you're developing this TV series where the entire race is annihilated and barely escaping, and we just had these buildings fall. It's perfect to tap into people, and I know. I felt a lot more about it because I was in New York when 9/11 happened, so I saw immediately what they were doing, and Richard, you know, and I talked about it afterwards, so definitely was influenced by it.
Any other questions at the moment?
Yes.
So actually, I did have a question. What do you think of Richard Hatch's books? He had quite a bit of different books that he wrote, or, you know, had an influence on, gave input on. Do you think, is it definitely maybe a continuation of the original series, or?
His novel series was what he intended to do with The Second Coming. Either the fourth or fifth book, I can't remember, it's terrible, and it's not Richard's fault. The publisher, he sent in, him and the co-writer sent in the manuscript, which was a first draft, and they were working on the second draft, and all of a sudden the book was published. And I don't know if any of you have read this book, but it's like Starbuck's funeral is the chapter before Starbuck dies. You've read that? Yeah. And I was like, when it came out, I was like, Rich, what the hell? And he was like, I'm so mad about it, I don't want to talk about it. So, I mean, in general, clearly he loved the characters and loved the thing, and that's why he wanted to do Second Coming. And when he couldn't, that didn't stop him. He's like, all right, I'll do novels. You know, that was the type of guy he was.
What about the original series was in really two parts? And I always think of the first half of the original series as like this week's episode, which classic movie are we going to emulate this time? They did High Noon, they did the Guns of Navarone. What was funny was they had that Alistair MacLean, I call it the Alistair MacLean Memorial episode, because it was the Guns of Navarone and Ice Station Zebra combined as the gun on Ice Planet Zero.
That was one of the better...
I was waiting for Rock Hudson to show up, you know.
That was definitely one of the better episodes outside of the... Because the pilot was... What was it like? Was it
three hours?
Four parts? Yeah, it was like three...
Three-hour television show,
And did that include getting to the Egyptian planet?
That's the second. That's the. They had a two-part after the 3-hour pilot. The next two.
Because what was supposed to happen originally is it was supposed to be a bunch of 2-hour movies made for television, and they were going to take breaks in between so the special effects guys could get stuff, they could get good writing, and then the ratings on the pilot was so good. The producers were like, "Nope, you're doing a weekly show. Get some crap out there," which is why we got some of those terrible filler episodes.
Yes, yeah,
So no, it's when the two-parters, generally speaking, are the better ones because those are the ones that they had planned to do. The other ones were like, "Crap, get something out there."
The Living Legend is probably the high point, I think, that the two-parter with Kane the Pegasus. But I'm gonna say the second half then. It was like they'd actually taken time to think it all out now. You know, the first half was very episodic, and you had those movie references. But the second half of the season, it was interesting to see where they were going because they kind of forgot about the Cylons for a little bit. They got a whole new enemy that was like the Nazis in space, the Eastern Alliance. And they started doing stuff with the Terra, which was not Earth, but was it Earth? Was it kind of Earth, you know? And the guys from Emergency showed up in the spaceship. And I'm going, whoa, this is cool. So it's like they were really going somewhere interesting in the second half of the series. And then it ended, you know. And I always wondered, what were they going to do if they'd had a second season, you know? Because it looked like they were kind of leaving the Cylons behind. They'd kind of done that, you know.
Yeah, they were getting feedback that the Cylons were boring. It was the same thing over and over again.
They were.
It was like watching the kick cart.
Yeah,
but it was. I got a question, and I've been dying to ask this for years. With the reboot, and then going back and looking at the old series, and then the appearance of the Pegasus, and how they went two different ways with it from the series. And I'd like to hear other people's opinions on how they feel about that.
Beau Bridges should have been Admiral Kane.
Instead of his dad?
But I think Michelle Forbes should have been his daughter. So it would have been this sort of parallel between Lee and...
Oh, but you mean in the new show, Beau Bridges?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, oh. That would have been interesting.
Could have been.
What about Jeff Bridges as...
He's too much money.
I'm just trying to imagine him as Lebowski,
the dude.
As the cat of the Emerald. But anyway,
the Pegasus abides, man.
So
well, the Pegasus on the original series, they clearly, yeah, exactly. That's very good. The Pegasus on the original series, they just slapped a different name on the landing bay because it's. They don't want to build a whole other one just for two episodes. Whereas I love how on the new show, it was like a whole big old hoss of a new ship, you know, because they could, I guess it was all CGI at that point, right?
Yeah, and it was a newer ship.
There was a great, much greater sense of suspense and menace when the Pegasus shows up than what they got out of Lloyd Bridges and the duplicate ship.
I thought they could have done more with it. And that was the point I was trying to make was you have this new, brand new battle. I mean, just huge. Absolutely. Everything on it worked.
Mm-hmm.
And here comes Battlestar Galactica just hunking along. It was supposed to be retired as a museum.
Yeah.
And it survives. Mm-hmm. Pegasus goes boom. But,
well, sometimes older's better.
That is true.
It's all about experience.
You can see my car.
I wanted to say something when you were talking about Terra.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting thing. The producer on those, I don't know if it was on all the Battlestar, but on those later episodes, Donald
Belisarius?
Yeah. So in the Terra episode, Apollo is in all white because he's been with the Angel ship, and everybody sees him differently than what he is. And he has to solve the problem. Donald went on to do Quantum Leap.
Yes.
So it's like, I was watching, I was like, wait. And I realized this is the prototype for Quantum
Galactica
Leap.
Galactica
right
was a backdoor pilot for Quantum Leap. I love it. That's right. I hadn't thought of that.
There's always some prior motive going into these things. Hey, if you look at a lot of TV shows today, if you go into a lot of TV shows today, did they just recast the character in a different show?
Typecast.
I'm just imagining. What's his name?
Scott.
The other one from Quantum Leap.
Dean Stockwell.
Yeah, I'm imagining Dean Stockwell going, Sam, you're on another planet. They're not humans. Act like you're from the Galactica.
A lot of that had to do with,
Come on.
The one with the bad breath.
Yeah.
Okay, there was a hand over here.
I had a question, actually, for you guys. With the 50th anniversary of 2001 Space Odyssey, and the 40th of Battlestar, do you think that there is any parallel or influence drawn from 2001 in theme and concept? Because really in sci-fi, there was not really any major
deep concepts.
Space 1999 is totally a ripoff, intentionally, of 2001. I mean, a lot of the same ship designers and things were on it too, and it was the idea to bring that aesthetic to TV.
Absolutely.
Not the second season, ignore that. But the first season. I never really thought about Battlestar being like that, though.
The only way I can see it is the idea of like this sort of cosmic, you know, this, it's got depth to it beyond just we're flying around with spaceships, right? Because that was one thing the original series did try to do. Was, you know, there's, you know, life here began out there, far across the universe. There was kind of a grandiosity to it that they tried to invoke at the beginning of every episode. Other than that, I'm not sure.
The reason Space 1999 confused people is it didn't, and the first season didn't do that well here, which is why they tried to revamp it, was because it's like, this episode's going on, things are happening, and then all of a sudden, like, the hand of God reaches out and saves them. And we don't explain it, and you don't know what's going on.
And they look out the window,
it was Martin Landau, come on.
Right, of course. But then Battlestar was the typical format where we're all wrapped up, and now, blah, blah, blah. Even the second season of Space 1999, they were literally drinking beer at the end of each episode and smiling into the freeze frame. So, you know, so I don't see the connection.
That was the other thing, is I always wondered if the Galactica on its way to Earth would pass the moon. You know, you'd get that great scene where they're looking up on the view screen and they see the Galactica and you hear... Dum, 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 dum. That would have been awesome. I always did these mashups in my head.
The next day, as the ship passes and the moon rattles.
I always did these mashups in my head, and I always wished that they could have them in real life.
I used to do mashups with the action figures.
I
had Han Solo flying my Mattel Eagle.
But you're thinking about original thought. You know, where can they go with it? Where does everybody get their concepts? I mean, go back to Asimov. Go back to Heinlein. I mean, Heinlein didn't deal with aliens, really. I mean, he dealt with, well, like the human heart and direction. One dealt with robots, and one dealt with everything else nobody else wanted to touch. So where did they get their ideas from?
Quick question: Did you see a connection that we don't see?
I see a connection with the reboot.
Oh, I was talking about the old one. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I've only seen the new one. I haven't seen the original show at all. But
I'll have
the new
to.
One, the high concept of the low concept of it, it really. It connects with 2001, and you don't see a lot of that in sci-fi, really. You see the flying around, you see the contents. You see very low concept.
Mm-hmm.
And it's...
What about, you were talking about AI, everybody. I'm sorry, Dave.
I'm just imagining on the last episode of Battlestar Galactica, when they come to Proto-Earth, and like a cargo black slab falls out of one of the shuttles and goes thunk in the ground, and like the little ape guys come up.
Why couldn't Elon Musk, car just fly right into the side of the ship?
There you go.
That caused the disc to fall out.
I like it.
I was watching Voyager. I know this is a sidetrack, but there was a Voyager episode where they find a car in space, and I thought that was hilarious because of the Elon Musk thing.
Okay. Getting back to Galactica discovering Earth, I enjoyed the last episode of the new series because these people were all tired and they find Earth and they finally can rest, and it was a peaceful ending to the war-racked show, you know, and it was a very good episode. But I would have liked to have seen something more like the Galactica 1980 comic book by Dynamite, where it's kind of interesting. It's based on the original series, Galactica 1980, but it's so much better. Where the warriors...
It's like a finale.
Yeah, Galactica is actually shot down by Earth's military and it crashes on the White House. Lieutenant Dylan is shot dead by the Army. And it's quite a drama, and Obama has to struggle to meet the President of the U.S. And it would have been a really good... As far as the original series, that would have been a good finale for the original series.
100%, but the thing is, the whole point of 1980 was they were canceling Battlestar because it was too expensive.
Yeah.
And then Glenn was like, well, what if we did it on the cheap? What if we find Earth and we don't have to use that much special effects? And that's why, I mean, I remember as a kid watching the Silence destroy LA. I'm thinking, this is the most amazing thing ever. And then I saw, what is it? Towering Earthquake or Towering Inferno, whatever it was. Wait, it's actually the same footage.
Yeah.
They just put the Cylon ships in there. I was oh my God, they didn't spend anything on this.
So. Do you know the deal of why Lauren Green was in Galactica 1980, even though he was older?
Yeah, he he was upset that the show was canceled, and they weren't going to use him.
No.
And he was like, no, I want to be in this, please.
He just showed up, and they didn't. Nobody had the heart to tell him that he wasn't in it, so they just wrote him back in. You know,
I like the stapler guy. Yeah. He's been showing up for 6 years. He was fired.
Yeah, exactly.
What's funny is, I don't know if anyone's ever read the classic novels, but the novel of Galactica 1980, and because this is the way the pilot was written, it's Apollo and Starbuck. It's not Troy and Dylan.
Oh, wow.
But when Richard saw what was happening with the, he was like, no, I'm not going to be in this anymore. So that's why it became what it is. But Steve Dirk even still decided to be in it because he came back for the last episode, which is actually the best episode in 1980, which is really just a flashback to something that happened during the regular show, you know.
And wasn't Troy supposed to be boxy?
Yes.
Okay, so there was a connection. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're getting close to the end of our panel. It's already almost that time. So what I'd like us to do is kind of like sort of do some final thoughts, closing thoughts from the panelists. Where do you see, if anywhere, the next steps for Battlestar as we remember it now? What's likely to be on the horizon, if anything?
I don't know. I remember the end of the last episode. Two toasters walking into a pawn shop. So they kind of left that kind of out there.
Yeah.
But nobody's picked up the ball on it that I know of.
Sorry, the punch.
Well, that's what they walked into.
Right? It sounds like the beginning of a great joke.
But yeah. Does anyone else still think it's weird that the new show is 15 years old now?
God.
Thanks for the reminder.
Yeah. But
it's in the panel title.
Where there's in film media, we're going to see a reboot, a complete new reboot. There's no question of that. Without saying too much, in ancillary media, we're probably going to see things that are sort of continuations of the old stuff. That's all I can say right now.
Hmm.
But there's going to be a
follow in on Facebook.
Yeah, please, everyone do. I think my regular Facebook is Andrew E. Gaska on Facebook, and I will inform people of anything I can as I know.
I think that I'm just glad that the new show came along just for the property in general and was so successful, because I think if it had been much longer, it might have slipped a little bit into oblivion, like Space 1999 kind of has, you know, and they might have just said, oh, that's too old, you know.
Oh, that's back on reruns.
So what, and it's wonderful.
I forget what channel it's on, but they pulled it back on TV again.
Good. Well, it's just that what the new show did for itself was fantastic, but it also brought the entire property back into people's consciousness again. And so I guess there's much more likelihood that stuff will happen now than there would have been if we hadn't had anything since 1979 or 1980, mm-hmm. you know, so that's great. It's a property that could very well have just slid right off into, you know, oblivion. So I'm glad that it hadn't. And that was the Battlestar Galactica 40th anniversary panel. It also included the 15th anniversary of the new show. And I failed to mention that at the beginning, but we love the new show as well as the old show. I have to thank the various patrons who keep our show on the air. If you want to be part of the White Rocket Entertainment family and help keep all of our various shows going, then go to patreon.com and search Van Plexico, or go to www.plexico.net, plexico.net. Either one of those places will get you right there, and you can sign up, and you get all sorts of benefits which are listed on the website if you go there, including having your name mentioned with all the other supporters. And here they are. We have to thank Joseph Fine, Christopher Burleson, Ben Spooner, Stephen Thompson, Phil Amthor of WeHaveDonuts.com, Steve Trawick, Richard Stevens, Justin Bean, Chris Usher, David Evers, Tom Anderson, Auburn Tiger Talk, Clay Henson, Timothy, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Steve Harlan, Andrew Barber, Jared Albrick, Rich Reimer, Bill Matthews, Will Summerford, John McCune, Catherine England, Ann Congian, David Simpson, Josh Teal, Mike Finley, Earl Ricks, Dave Powell, Michael Kirshner, Mick Vigicana, Matt Robbenheimer, Ward Am Wade, Chris Thrash, Logan Chilton, George Gaston, Tony Perry, Alex Wynn, Jason Albrick, J.W. Rice, Dave Medinas, Mark Squire, Joey Miller, Matthew Wagstaff, Russell Milling, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Raines, Grant Rumble, Nicholas Craig, Patrick Williams, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Ben Amos, Randall Walker, Joshua Corbett, plus our one-time and anonymous donors. We have a couple of new that are not yet on my list, but we thank you too, and we'll have you on there next time. We appreciate all of you. And so the Rocket's going to get on out of here for another episode. We have a few more Dragon Con episodes coming up where we will present panels that were there if you happen to miss them or want to hear them again. In the meantime, the Rocket's getting out of here for another episode, and we'll see you guys down the road.
Griffin, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.